Hello, my name's Alex Newman, and welcome to the latest in the Extraction podcast series from the IC, in which we speak to the heads of natural resources companies. This morning, I'm joined by Paul Welch, Chief Executive of SDX Energy, a £110 million market cap oil and gas company with exploration and production assets in North Africa, whose shares are up 300% since the company joined AIM a year ago this week. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
As you only joined AIM fairly recently, there'll be quite a few listeners who are unfamiliar with the company and the story. So could we maybe start by getting an overview of SDX and its operations?
Sure. So thanks for having me. Again, we're TSX and AIM listed. As you said, we listed on AIM last year. We're focused on North Africa, primarily onshore North Africa, and we have assets in both Egypt and Morocco at this point. We're producing about 4,000 barrels a day, and we have development opportunities, production, and some just exciting exploration, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. So we kind of have the entire gamut of opportunities in a relatively small company at the moment.
So you're in Egypt and Morocco.
Yes.
Why Egypt? Why Morocco?
So I think two different reasons. In Egypt, we're there because we like the business environment. We've been there for a long time. We've been there since 2008. So we understand how it works, and it has some of the best geology in North Africa. I mean, it's got three of the top 10 basins that deliver value over the last 10 years. The fiscal terms are good. The business environment's great. You have a lot of local indigenous service companies, so that keeps your costs low. So we like it for those reasons. In Morocco, it's a slightly different story. It's not as well blessed with hydrocarbons, but the fiscal terms are fantastic, and the local natural gas prices are wonderful. So, you know, there you pay a very small royalty and then 30% corporate income tax, but you get a 10-year tax holiday for that. So your fiscal terms are extremely attractive, and the local gas market is very underserved. So, you know, we're selling gas at $10 MMBTU, whereas in the rest of the world, you know, if you get $4 or $5, you're doing well. So for us, it's very attractive economics, which is why we're there.
I mean, in Egypt, some natural resources companies have occasionally struggled with getting paid. Yep. Issues around that. I mean, how do you mitigate against that? And what's your experience of doing business in
so,
the country?
Yeah, so there's two ways that we've mitigated that. I mean, firstly, we've taken a combination of Egyptian pounds and US dollars. Some companies aren't in a position to do that. You know, we did a recent acquisition of a company called Circle. They didn't have the ability to take any Egyptian pounds, which meant their receivables were quite high. Because we have a lot of other businesses in Egypt and we can utilize those Egyptian pounds, we can take a combination of the two, which allows us to get paid a lot quicker. We also don't have a huge amount of production there. I mean, we make, you know, 4,000 barrels a day. So our, you know, we're not a BP or a Shell where we, you know, have hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. So our revenue base is relatively small. And we have a team on the ground that has relationships and works it very hard. So, you know, up until the time we took over Circle, we basically had zero receivables. And now that we've taken over Circle, we picked up some receivables, but we're slowly working those down. I think the government has made big strides in improving the commercial situation there. So I think you're going to see many people get paid back almost entirely over 2017. So I think we're not going to be unique anymore in that we'll be paid back. So I think it's a combination of flexibility on currency and relationships that have allowed us to get paid.
That being as it may, I mean, Egypt's still a country which in the last 10 years has at various points been in a state of emergency. You know, there's mm-hmm. lots of trouble, you know, in North Africa. For, you know, both an investor and as a director of an oil company, what's the sort of risk premium you should apply to operating in countries like Morocco and Egypt?
Well, in Morocco, I think it's close to zero because it's very stable. It's got one of the best governments, I think, in North Africa. It's proven. The king is well liked and loved by its people. So there, I think the risk premium is quite small. In Egypt, it's probably greater. However, if you look at what's happened in the E&P space over the time, you know, we've never had any security incidents in any of our fields or anybody else's. We've never had any shutdowns related to terrorism or business interruption. So I think they've done a great job in kind of isolating the industry from macro events that don't involve us, let's say. We've been through three regime changes. We've managed to operate and get paid through the entire time. We're not unique in that sense. I think many other companies have done the same thing. So I think the news portrays Egypt slightly riskier than I think we see it on the ground. So for us, it's okay. It's not, you know, the North Sea, but it's not that bad. We quite enjoy it, and we think that creates opportunities because people perceive it as having issues, and that keeps out the competition. So it allows us to get, you know, more deeply involved in things that perhaps a small company like us couldn't have in other parts of the world. So we kind of enjoy it there in that regard.
So your base in Egypt obviously increased with the acquisition of Circle Oil, these assets from Circle Oil.
Yeah.
I mean, and this has been a very, very busy year so far this year, and that acquisition was made or announced in January.
Yes.
Given Circle Oil had to sell these assets eventually and they're in chronic debt, what reassurance could you give investors that these weren't just cheap assets, but they're actually assets worth having?
Okay, that's a good question. Well, I mean, so we bought two assets from them. Right. We bought their Moroccan business in its entirety, and we bought the Circle asset in Egypt. The asset in Egypt, we already own 10% of, and we'd been in that asset since 2008, as had Circle. So we knew it as well as they did. And so for us, it was a very simple acquisition of that. And when we looked at the opportunity initially, we were only focused on Egypt because it made perfect sense to roll into our portfolio. It took us from 10% to 50%. And so that's what we were interested in. As part of the exercise to evaluate it, we then looked at Tunisia and we looked at Morocco, and we actually really liked the Moroccan business. And so we made a concerted effort to push for both Egypt and Morocco. And at the moment, we're actually making more cash from Morocco than we are from the asset we picked up from Circle in Egypt. So we did a lot of due diligence. It took us a year to pull the deal off. So we're very comfortable with what we picked up. We paid the right price and we're getting a decent return. So, I mean, just to put it in perspective for your listeners, we paid $30 million for the Circle assets, and they're going to deliver $22 million in free cash flow in 2017. So the payout is just over a year. So, you know, for us, we think we paid the right price.
Right. And those assets include both, you know, as you say, obviously there's cash generation there, but also exploration assets. I mean,
yes.
Given your size, I mean, you're still relatively, you know, you're a relatively small company at the moment.
Yes, true.
I mean, what are the challenges of managing a joint exploration and production company, given, you know, what I imagine is a limited workforce, a limited number of hours in the day that you have as a chief executive?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of focus, because we're not looking all over Africa. We're looking, you know, at our assets in Morocco and in Egypt, and we're focused on shores, which means we keep our costs very low. So in the case of Egypt, you know, we have exploration opportunities in certain parts that we'll talk about here in a minute where we just had a success. And in Morocco, where we picked them up, we're just looking to pick up assets around our existing businesses. So step out opportunities, things that we can connect into our local pipeline. And so for us, it's just a matter of focus. We focus on what we can do, on the capital that's available to us. And so the well costs, you know, for an exploration well, we're going to drill in Morocco, is going to cost us between $850,000 and $1 million, right? So relatively cheap. We just drilled a well in Egypt where our partner carried the first $3 million of it, and the total well cost is around $4 million. So, you know, we do what we can within our cash flow. And so we focus on those opportunities that can deliver things that we can manage that are the right size for us, right? So we don't go and look in the deep water. We're not trying to change the world. We're just focused on what we can do in and around the asset base we have and just grow kind of organically from there.
Given that cost base then, I mean, are you relatively comfortable at the moment with the oil price jump, you know, oil and gas prices jumping around on whatever, you know, OPEC ministers are saying day to day?
I think you might find this surprising, but for us, you know, we can make money down to $21 Brent. Right. So if the price of oil drops, we see a lot of opportunities to pick up assets where other people are struggling, because I did mention up front, we're debt free. And so, you know, we generate free cash, we're debt free. A lot of companies aren't in that position. So when the oil price drops, asset prices become cheaper. And so we see more opportunities becoming available when the price drops. Now, obviously, we'd like to see the price increase because our revenues increase commensurate with that. But for us, having a lower oil price for, you know, a limited period of time is not a problem. We see that as an opportunity to buy additional assets.
Let's talk hypothetically then about additional assets. And, you know, this is a perennial issue for people investing in AIM,
yeah,
is that natural resources companies return to the market, they see something great, it's the next big thing, and then they're, you know, they're diluted in a fundraising. What are the, you know, as you're looking to the rest of the year, what's your attitude to further fundraising if these opportunities came available?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to, well, I'm certain we're not going to fundraise for the remainder of 2017. The only time we would go back to the market is if we saw a great opportunity like Circle. We just made a discovery in the Nile Delta called South Dussouk. That needs to be developed. So our cash flow is going to be focused on that. So we can develop that at the moment without any additional fundraise. That's really what we're trying to do. If the price drops, if the opportunity set becomes available and we see something attractive, we're certainly gonna try and acquire it, and that may require a fundraise. But if you look at what we did in the last fundraise, nobody was diluted. It was very accretive. And so, you know, we announced a fundraise and our share price was 30p, and within a matter of a month or so, you know, it almost doubled. So I think we can make good accretive acquisitions if we stick to our disciplined approach that we've had in the past. And so, you know, even if we do see an opportunity and we have to go fundraise, it will not be dilutive to any shareholders.
On the subject of fundraising, and perhaps I should have asked this at the beginning, I mean, some investors will be keen to know as well, listeners will be keen to know, you're already listed on TSX. Why AIM as well? What's the point or service that two markets provide to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were originally listed on TSX, kind of a legacy thing, and we came to AIM deliberately in May of last year because we felt that the investor base here understood Egypt and understood Africa better, perhaps, than our investor base back in Toronto did in North America.
Are there parallels there with other companies that investors may be a bit more familiar with, or...?
That are dual listed.
That have exposure to North Africa.
I mean, there are many companies that have exposure to North Africa. A couple that are AIM listed as well. But again, we came because, you know, we talked to the market. The institutional investors are here. A lot of investors invest in Africa, and so we found that it was a very welcoming and interesting asset base here for us to tap. And so we've had a lot of good institutional support since we listed. And, you know, when we came to AIM, we told people, look, we see opportunities in the space. At the time, it was primarily in Egypt. So, you know, we intend to grow. And are you interested in growing with us? And the answer we got was a resounding yes. So that was, for us, I think, something very important. We wanted good, solid institution and retail shareholders as well that have supported the story. And so that's the biggest reason we came here.
So, Paul, I know you worked for an all major for a number of years. I mean, how does the current role and current ways of doing business in the cycle compare with, you know, project sanctions and the like at larger, some of your larger peers?
Well, so the nice thing is when you work for a major, you typically start when you're quite young. So you can go and try things and experiment, and they don't all work. And, you know, it's kind of their nickel that you're doing it on. So So that's one thing. But also, I think it, you know, I worked for Shell for quite a while, and it you know, you have a very rigorous technical training. You see how the process works. And you also see how sometimes it doesn't work to your advantage. So coming to a small company allows you to kind of take the best of both worlds. You're much more entrepreneurial. You can do things a lot quicker. The projects are slightly smaller, but you can still apply the same technical rigor that you did when you were at a major company. And I think that combination works for us. It's also because it's a small environment, everybody has skin in the game. So if you're successful, you know, everybody benefits. And so that makes it a kind of a much more enjoyable, I'd say, part of the process. So, you know, I think the combination is interesting. I started with a very large company and I've gone to progressively smaller companies. And I would say I really enjoy the small company environment, particularly when, you know, things are going well, like you have a discovery, you have good cash flow, you have opportunities ahead of you. You know, that's really when working for small companies is fantastic in my mind.
Brilliant. Well, there you have it. So I've been speaking with Paul Welch of SDX, ticker SDX on AIM. Paul, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And for more Investors Chronicle podcasts, including interviews, debates, and the usual roundups from the companies, markets, and personal finance teams, go to investorschronicle.co.uk or visit Acast or iTunes.